Hey, folks, and welcome to Typology, the show on which we explore the human personality through the lens of the Enneagram. My name is Anthony Skinner, your producer and co-host. So happy to have you here with us today, folks. We've got a great show for you today. Our guest today is author of the book, I Am Weak, I Am Strong, Building a Resilient Faith, a Resilient Life. And this book drops in November, by the way. He is a pastor, author, and motivational speaker. He was diagnosed with brain cancer and chose as a form of therapy for himself to compete in the Ironman triathlon while going through treatment, right? Big deal. He is a 3-wing 4, and his name is Jay Hewitt. We have a really great conversation with him today, and he gets super vulnerable, really interesting as a 3 to get as vulnerable as he did. And I know I really enjoyed getting to know him, and I think you're going to really enjoy this interview. Really glad you're here. And that is it for me, Anthony Skinner. And now, without any further ado, here is the host of the show, Ian Crum.
Hey, Typology Tribe, Ian Morgan Cron here. Welcome to the podcast on which we explore the mystery of the human personality and the life of Anthony Skinner. Anthony, how are you, buddy?
Man, I'm doing great because I've already gotten my 30 minutes of therapy with you before this show, but now I'm going to turn the passenger seat over to our guest. Why don't you make the introduction?
Man, I am stoked for our guest today. His name is Jay Hewitt. He's an Enneagram 3 and the author of the new book, I Am Weak, I Am Strong, Building a Resilient Faith for a Resilient Life. Jay, welcome to Typology.
Hey, so excited to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Well, it's a delight. Anthony, what were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say he's a 3-wing 4, so he's in good company today because we're both 4-wing 3s, so...
I thought recently you've been saying 4-wing 5, which to me was a little odd, but that's okay.
Hey, I've got both of those wings going, so.
All right. You're balancing out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's all about the balance in the Enneagram, man. It's all about balancing.
Yeah. Well, sometimes I say I'm 6'3", and sometimes I say I'm 6'2", you know, depending on the day.
That's right. Me too.
That's awesome. Right.
Sometimes that awesome. Doesn't work for me. I can't be an 8 with a 5-wing or a 5 with an 8-wing. I'm height challenged for sure. all the way. Jay, you are an Enneagram 3. We like to start with every guest talking about how they discovered they were their Enneagram type and how it landed for them. Because, and this is particularly important for 3s, and maybe you can explain this to me. Whenever I do Enneagram workshops, oftentimes the Enneagram 3s in the room will come to me and say, we felt like you were particularly hard on us. Mm. 2s do the same thing. 2s will do the same thing. Actually, I should say 2s are the ones who come with a delegation. 3s will come to me privately and say it to me. And it is the shame triad. But I'm wondering, for people who look so confident, behind the veneer, there's so much shame. Mm. As you talk about that, maybe you could include something about that. Help us understand it.
Yeah. So you asked how I came to find out. It started with the way I even discovered Enneagram is one of my friends wrote a blog post matching your Enneagram number to the Jordan shoe. So like it was obviously... just clickbait. And I really wanted to be the Jordan 11. And so I took the test. But as I was going through and answering as honestly as I could, when it returned a 3, it made sense to me. I've always thrived on achieving. And, you know, maybe I have closed my ears to the things that you're talking about, where there might be pushback, or maybe after we record this, I'll come privately to you and tell you you've been hard on me. But no, it made sense. I've always strived to achieve. And I think, inwardly, the shame of that is, particularly for me as a pastor, sometimes I can feel like I'm like, all right, I think inwardly like, oh, I'm making this about me. You know, I want to make it about others. I'm serving others. I want to make it about glorifying God, but am I achieving for my own good, for my own name? And even with this book and the story behind the book, I say, you know, as I was going through cancer, I decided to do an Ironman for my daughter. And sometimes I get trolls saying, obviously you weren't doing it for your daughter, you were doing it for you. And that really gives me pause, and I have to search, because it does throw me in that shame spot. And so there's always this struggle back and forth of, yeah, I want to achieve, I hope I'm achieving for, you know, good reasons, kind, loving reasons. And then sometimes I'm wondering, but am I just doing this for my ego? And so ego is the wrestle for me.
Mm. Well, I mean, a couple of reasons I think maybe the shame comes up. One is, twos, threes, and fours all struggle with issues of identity. They're just kind of not sure who they really are. And they can't believe they can be loved for who they really are. So they project images or masks, right? To become people that will win love, right? And approval. And then particularly with threes, it would be admiration. And so when you struggle with issues around identity, one of the things you're going to fear is exposure. And that's actually what shame is. Shame is the fear of being exposed oftentimes as a fraud or as an imposter or for being who you are and then being rejected or, you know, exiled from the tribe, if you will. So I think that is a fear for threes. It's a fear for twos and fours, but for really different reasons. And because the mask and the projection of the three is of competence and achievement and productivity and charisma and all these things, when they hear about the type, particularly the chameleon-like behavior of the unhealthy three, they feel like they're getting outed in front of a group. Mm. So if it's in a workshop, they're like, oh, crap, he's like letting people know. So I think it's very normal for you to have the kinds of questions you're having. And I think it's really healthy for a three to have the kinds of questions you have, where you're questioning your own motives. Like, what's going on here, really? You know, I'd be more nervous about you if you just felt like it was purely for all the right reasons that you're doing this, because chances are it's a mix of both.
Right. Yeah. Right? Yeah. There's those multiple levels of motivation and motive. And that's absolutely right. And as you talk about identity and you talk about the desire to be loved, particularly for me through achievement, you know, I think that goes back, if you're familiar with attachment theory. I grew up in a home that was very dysfunctional, and I had some real attachment wounds early on in life. And the way I learned how to deal with it is through achieving. I was a good student. I was smart. I got praised by my teachers. So at least when I left home and I was at school, there I was accepted, there I was praised, and there I felt safe. And so I learned very early that through achievement, I could feel loved and I could feel secure as well. And then the identity piece of then going back into the home and the messages that I was receiving there at home versus what I was receiving out in the world, at school, at my friends' houses, yeah, that identity was always being pulled back and forth. And inwardly, I'm trying to make sense of it. And when your primary connection points are telling you one thing, that really can mess with your self-identity over the long haul.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Jay, I cannot wait to talk about your new book. But before we get to it, I really feel like I need to talk to you about death for a moment.
Okay, we can go there.
So it seems to me that, well, you know the great quote, right? Nothing so focuses the mind quite like knowing that you're meeting with the hangman in the morning. I can't remember exactly what the quote was, but something to that effect. When you think about your Enneagram type as a three, it's all about, often about productivity, about accomplishment, about all these things. And you're realizing, I might die. I'm 37 years old, which is kind of an early time to leave the party, right?
Absolutely.
I want to know through the lens of your personality, how that affected you, that like facing death. I mean, death, man, Jiminy crickets. I mean, it will focus the mind.
Yeah. Yeah. When I received a diagnosis and a prognosis with that was, you know, pretty devastating. The type of brain cancer I have is terminal, no cure. And so they were able to give me a prognosis with some scientific evidence behind it to give me an idea of what my lifespan would look like. Yeah, that focuses you. You start to ask the big questions, pray the big prayers. And I was trying to figure out, God, what are you doing? And whatever you're up to, how can I join you in that? Because I think my personality type goes right to, I want to do something of significance. I need to make my life count. I need to do something that makes me feel like my 37 years here were worth it. And so as I was wrestling with that, praying through that, I was also wondering, you know, what am I leaving behind? And what I was leaving behind was a young daughter and a wife. And that was the most important thing to me. And so I thought to myself and thought, you know, I have a chance to do something loving on a grandiose level. I can show my daughter what resilience looks like. You know, I think every parent wants to show their kid that they can do anything, but I had the opportunity to show my daughter that not just that she could do anything, but as she was going after her dreams, she was going to get knocked down. And I could show her what it looked like to get up and to press on and to live a life of resilience, both in faith and in life. And so that was a huge motivating factor. Would I have thought of those things without the prognosis? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Iron Man was never on my bucket list. It wasn't like, oh, I've always wanted to do this. No. It all came down to, I want to achieve something that is impossible, and I want to achieve something that's significant, and I want to leave something behind for my daughter.
So it's interesting. Most threes I know will say that if they don't have a goal, they fall into depression. Mm. That if they don't have something attainable where there's some metrics involved, like where it's like has a quantitative dimension, right? So you could say that, you know, a three might say, you know, I want to become a more loving person. Well, that's a little vague. Now the three, I think it's a great thing, right? But the three really loves things like, I want to finish an Ironman and here's the time I want to have. Like it's got a quantitative dimension to it, right? It's got a training has a beginning, a middle, and then you do it, it has an end. And then you can evaluate the whole thing. Or, you know, you start a church, right? And you say, okay, well, this and that, but there's going to be 2,000 people by this date, you know, blah. Has that been true in your experience? Like, give me a quantitative goal that I can nail, or I'm going to be kind of lost.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And as you mentioned, launching the church, I had it all plotted out. I knew the metrics, and I knew how I was going to get there, and how long it was going to take, and I was on track with that. And then when I got diagnosed, that all fell by the wayside. You know, out on medical leave, no longer achieving those goals. And as we've talked about already, those multiple levels of motivation and motive, one of the huge motives for doing Ironman during this time was to combat depression. So just as you said, in my past, like when my father died unexpectedly, I fell into depression. We've got quite a heritage of that on my mom's side of the family. So anyway, I fell into depression. I was on the medication. It was helping quite a bit, but then the medication side effects really started to become undesirable. And so I started exercising. And I found that through exercise, I was able to rebalance those chemicals, and I was able to wean off the medication, and exercise became a part of my life from that point on. Now, facing the most stress I've ever faced in my life, I knew depression was going to be at my doorstep, and I knew that I needed to step up my exercise. Now, if I didn't have a goal for that, it's hard to get out of bed. It's hard to get out of bed mm-hmm. when you're going through chemo and you've got a headache and you're sick and you're tired, you're fatigued. And then if it's hard to get out of bed, then it's even harder to exercise, unless for me, I've got this big goal. If my goal was to run a marathon, it probably wouldn't have been enough for me. But if my goal was to run a marathon after I'd already done 115 miles of swimming and biking, that's bigger. You know, 26 miles versus 140 miles. 140 was big enough that if I didn't get out of bed every day, I wasn't going to make it. And so there was no going half in. I had to go full in, which was able to give me enough to get out of bed.
Mm-hmm. So I think what you're beautifully giving us an example of is how a superpower can be leveraged for something good. And as you know, this could be, in the life of an unhealthy three, this ability could be leveraged for something really bad. You know what I mean? And so it's a matter of self-observing, and saying, okay, well, and as we started the thing off in the beginning, is checking your motives, checking the motives. And I think checking motives is particularly important for threes, healthy or not, because deceit is their deadly sin. And it's really self-deceit. Mm. And so if you don't check your motives, it's a particular liability or vulnerability, I should say, for Enneagram threes is, good. I mean, I think it's great that you check your motives and do your thing.
I have a question.
Sure.
I'd like to know how, going through this, because you said sort of your goals at the church, they weren't maybe as important my question is, how did it reframe what you originally were thinking? Yeah, I want this many people at the church. I want to do this. I want to build this building. I want, all of those goals. How did it reframe your perspective on being a pastor?
Yeah, that's a great question. Going back to that identity piece, once I put my faith into Jesus, once I felt a calling to ministry, that was a huge part of my identity. So then to be taken out of being able to lead a church, to work out that calling, that could really hit identity hard. But I felt like as I put my eyes towards doing something loving for my daughter, I felt like my calling got to pivot a little bit. Maybe the assignment inside of the calling. I felt like I was being able to use the same giftings that were within me, the same aims, the same calling, but I just had to pivot that assignment a bit. And so that became a very driving force and fortified me with belief of, okay, this seems impossible, but it's possible. It's possible because it's larger than just me. It's larger than just my family, but this is a calling that I've got to step up to.
One follow-up question to that. What kind of a challenge was it for you to all of a sudden need the people that you were pastoring as opposed to being sort of the guy who was leading the charge, right?
Yes.
You kind of had all the answers, but now all of a sudden you're in this super weak, vulnerable place where you actually need them.
Yeah, Anthony, so perceptive. yeah, so Ian, you talked about earlier the vulnerability being a very difficult thing. And that was really hard for me. On a couple different levels. Before needing them, I had to expose that I was going through this. And I remember that was a huge struggle within me of I'm in a public role where people know my life and I can't just hide from that. But to what extent do I let them in? And there was this moment where things are still getting figured out, not sure what's going on. Don't have the diagnosis yet, but know something's majorly wrong. And I got a text message from an older woman in the church. And she texted me and just said, hey, I feel like God put you on my heart. I'm praying for you. Anything specific I can pray for you for? And my first response was no, no, just hey, thanks for praying. I'm all good. And I was literally about to text that back. And I just felt this sense of no, you've got to let them in. This is what the church is about. It's about community. It's about carrying one another's burdens. And although I was leading the charge, I need others to carry my burdens. And so I decided to step out right in that moment. And I decided to say, yeah, I could use prayer. And that started me down the line of opening up to others in the church and people around me. And once that domino fell, then the support, people rallied around me because, as you said, I was used to being the one to rally the troops to carry others' burdens. And so they wanted so badly to be able to care for me in that way. And it felt very uncomfortable. But the more I allowed people in, the further I could go. And so one of the things that I talk about in the book is that not wanting to admit that you're weak is a weakness. And I had to wrestle with that. And once I was allowing myself to admit that I needed help, that I was weak and I needed help, that's when I became stronger. And not just in myself, but having a support group around me. You know, when starting with one person texting me, to then on the day of the race, there was over 100 volunteers from my church helping me get through this thing. And that was huge.
Hey, everybody, if you've been listening to Typology very long, you know that I am a huge believer in the intensive counseling programs at Restoring the Soul in Denver, Colorado. So I am super excited to tell you that now through the end of 2023, Restoring the Soul is offering special discounts to Typology listeners.
Woo-hoo!
So if you are at a place in your life where you are really wanting to press into those challenging personal or relational issues that keep you from the life you want to be living, listen to me. If you are in a season where personal or relational brokenness is weighing you down, now is the perfect time to contact Restoring the Soul. My longtime friend, and I'm talking 35 years, friends, Michael Cusick and his team of world-class therapists have created an intensive counseling process where you don't have to wait months or even years to find the personal or relational healing you need. Instead, you meet with them in half-day blocks over 1 or 2 weeks so you can get unstuck from the place you are to where you want to be. Now, Anthony, you have done one of these intensives with Michael Cusick and Restoring the Soul, right?
Oh, man, I have. I love Michael. I got to be with him for a week. For me, he's like a counselor meets spiritual director, and I would say he has razor-sharp perception, and he uncovered some things for me that were life-changing.
I love that. So tell people about this incredible offer.
Yeah, this is great. So right now, there's a special offer for Typology listeners only. Restoring the Soul is offering $1,000 off any counseling intensive that is booked before the end of the year and $2,000 off the regular price if you book and attend a counseling intensive in 2023.
No.
Yes.
All right, so that's $1,000 off any intensive that's booked before the end of the year and $2,000 if you attend one of their programs in 2023.
Yes, amazing. That's a huge break.
That is a huge, huge break. So listen, friends, take advantage of this amazing opportunity by contacting Restoring the Soul at www.restoringthesoul.com. That's www.restoringthesoul.com.
That's amazing. I was gonna ask you, what was something you discovered about yourself having gone through that? And it sounds like you answered the question for me there, because
And you know, the whole journey was a journey of self-discovery. The Ironman journey, this cancer journey, man, you can't not discover things about yourself, because you're under so much pressure, so much stress. And then so things get pressed out of you.
What was the number one thing you discovered about yourself?
The number one thing that I discovered is that I hate vulnerability, that I hide from it and I run from it. But if I want to be strong, it's going to come through weakness. It's going to come through vulnerability. So on a physical level, like we were just talking about, it's letting people in and it's saying, I need help. Can you take me to an appointment? Can you fill an aid station for me? Whatever it might be. But then on a deeper level, because after the race, I have tried now to, again, pivot that assignment, because I'm still not back leading the church. So I've pivoted that assignment to say, okay, can I take all the same energy that I put into Ironman, and can I now put it all towards my family? And the number one thing I need to learn to do that I'm struggling, I'm in therapy, I keep banging my head over and over again trying to figure this out, but it's, I need to be vulnerable with my wife, number one. Absolutely, number one. And then also with my daughter on a different level. But I need to allow them to see my weakness. And that will become a strength of love. But it's not easy. And so the number one thing I learned about myself is vulnerability is difficult for me, and it needs to improve.
Can I dig just a little bit deeper down there?
Yeah.
Great. So what is it about yourself, inside yourself, that you're most afraid for others to see? Outside of weakness, okay, but what is it that makes the hair on the back of your neck as a three stand up? Like, this is the thing I don't want people to see.
I don't know. I mean, there's, I can give you a list, I guess, but I think when it boils down, it's, I want them so badly to see me as a good person. And I'm afraid that, you know, that almost there's like tally marks of, I got to have enough tally marks. But if they start taking tally marks away, is there a point where people will no longer see me as a good guy, as a good person? And I can't bear with that, I guess. So that's hard.
So let me ask you, if I put some different language to it. Thanks, by the way, for being so vulnerable in this conversation. But I'm wondering, you know, the thing that we say about twos in the heart triad is that they're very concerned with appreciation. And that for threes, they're very concerned with admiration. And that sort of came up for me when you were talking about wanting to be seen as a good person.
Yeah.
So if we were to look at the, you know, is another word for that admiration?
Absolutely.
Losing admiration.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, in my line of work, I'm on a platform and people put me on a pedestal. And that is very dangerous because you can get knocked off of a pedestal as quickly as somebody will put you up on one. Yeah. The admiration piece, it's even more scary to think about losing admiration. Mm-hmm. Than it is mm-hmm. not to have it in the first place.
You bet it is. Mm-hmm. You know, it's intoxicating. And, you know, when you're at the top of a game at certain points, the fear of losing reputation, the fear of losing platform, the fear of losing success, the fear of becoming irrelevant, the fear of being forgotten, the fear, you know, all these things start to emerge, you know, and, I've had that experience. And so success, you know, success is really overrated. There's a lot of stress and unhappiness that comes with success. At least that's been my experience. You know, it's, we tend to think, well, now I'm going to be happy. Once I get X, then sure. I'm going to be happy. And then, you know, it turns out it was life's big joke, you know, that, you know, in fact, all it did is create an addictive cycle where you can't get enough of it to be happy. And then when you get it, there's a lot of disillusionment.
Sure, sure. And the only way I know how to deal with that is then adjusting my meter for success, adjusting the end. And so where I'm at now, you know, yes, the book's coming out, the film's coming out, but what I'm focused on is being able to enjoy deep connection with the people that I love the most. And that's probably the hardest thing. That's the most challenging thing in my life because of where I'm coming from, because of childhood issues and just the path of life that I've been on. It's been tough to deeply enjoy relationships with people that I love and admire and care for so much, but to really enjoy those on a deep level, that's not easy. And so that's where I've tried to put my aim for success right there.
What's been like the most satisfying experience in getting that deep connection and when you let the guard down, you know, when you let the veneer down and you allow yourself to be known? Like, what's something that you come away with that you're like, wow?
Yeah. So my, you ask great questions. One of the reasons why my goal is to enjoy that is because that feeling is so foreign to me that it's often not enjoyable, that often it still feels a little too scary. It still feels a little too needy on my end, to truly enjoy it. But I think it's easiest with my daughter, right? Because, I don't know, she's 8 years old now and just has so much joy and so much love. And so to see her connect deeply with me and me to connect deeply with her, just to truly just enjoy her presence and who she is without her having to do anything, man, it feels so warm. It feels euphoric on a certain level. And those moments with my wife as well, but they're more scary. they're more scary in a marriage. And I think everybody that's married would be able to say, oh yeah, I get that. The stakes are a little higher there. So I'm trying, and I look forward to when those moments feel nothing but warmth, but not there yet.
It's so interesting, Jay. You know, sometimes people, you know, when they talk, well, you know, what's the growth path for my type, you know? And oftentimes, regardless of type, I tell people, spend time with children. When you're hanging out with an eight-year-old, right, if you're a one on the Enneagram, one, kids don't care if you're perfect or not. You know, if you're a three on the Enneagram, kids aren't really impressed by how many people are in your church or how many books you've sold, right? If you're a four, kids are really kind of grateful and happy, you know, not always looking around for what's missing, you know. I could go on and on, right, through all the numbers, why it would be healthy. Eights in particular, like, you know, to be get in touch with their own innocence. So I love that you are tapping into the wisdom of your daughter, because they provide a context in which we can kind of heal if we do the work with consciousness around children. You know, it can be really, really powerful. Now, you mentioned earlier that one of the things that came up for you were big questions. And I want to know for you as a three, like what were the questions that came up that were perhaps a challenge to the person you were before the diagnosis?
Yeah, the biggest questions that came up are faith related. You know, as life takes a major downward turn, there is a natural confusion. And naturally, I think anyone in my position, anyone of faith in my position, ask the question, why me? And maybe not even of faith. I think maybe that's universal. I don't know. But there's this tendency to say, why me? Why am I going through this? And in my specific brand of why me, it's not so much why me as if I'm above this, but it's why me, what can come out of this? Why am I going through this? And so the biggest question was this confusion with God. God, what are you doing? What are you doing? Why? You know, went through so much, just planted a church, going well, had difficulty having a child, had a child, you know, really, really working there. And then to think about my daughter losing her father at a young age, why? Why? Why would you allow this to happen? Very similar when my dad passed away. God, why would you allow this? What are you doing? And same thing here. So it's that deep wrestling of why, which leads a lot of people to walk away from their faith. A lot of people, you just can't answer that question. The anger that's wrapped up in something like that, it causes a lot of people to walk away. But as I wrestled, I came to the conclusion that for whatever reason, for whatever God's up to, which I had a pretty strong sense as I wrestled it, that you know, God wanted to teach me sincerely what true strength is, and that I was going to have to go through weakness to get there. I had that understanding. And so once I grabbed a hold of that understanding, then I knew I was going to have to pull close to God. I'd need to lean on my faith. And then it became, okay, then how? What do I do? How do I lean into this? How do I move forward in my daily life? And there's this kind of, it's kind of a cliche, but it's actually really proven to be helpful to me. There's a saying that goes something like, live like it's your last day. Dream like you'll live forever. Live like you'll die tomorrow. Something like that. And so I've had to hold that tension in my daily decisions of like, okay, I want to keep dreaming big dreams that, you know, like I'm going to live a lifetime, but also I'm not promised that. And actually they say I'm not going to be given that. And so I need to live each day very urgently.
Anthony, this has been a holy conversation, buddy.
It has been.
Sacred, wonderful, holy conversation, man. Jay Hewitt, author of the new book, I Am Weak, I Am Strong, Building a Resilient Faith for a Resilient Life. Enneagram 3, man. Welcome not only to Typology, but to our family. And thanks for being on the show today.
Yeah, man, this is awesome. The conversation's already been good. Thanks for the invite in, and looking forward to continuing.
Anthony?
Yes, sir.
Did I tell you that I loved you today?
Not yet, but I appreciate that. I love you too.
Well, there it is, my brother. And I love all of you who are listening, our Typology family. May you have love. May you have peace. May you have healing. And may you have rest. Until next time.